Okay, we will continue on to item number 27, our goose depredation update. And I believe Nick is with us in person. Welcome, sir.
Thank you for having me. Madam Chair, members of the Commission, Secretary Roebling, my name is Nick Rossman, Regional Wildlife Program Manager here out of Watertown in Region 4. And I was asked to speak to you today since you are in the mecca of Canada goose depredation, as you saw yesterday. Kind of about that program, give you a little bit of an update on what we do, how we do it, and how we are working things and keeping things organized on the backside. So, so a couple years ago, in 2022, actually last year was our initial year, seems like forever ago, we decided to improve our organization and efficiency on the staff side of things. So with the volume of calls coming in, it's very hard at the peak of planting season and as those beans are sprouting to keep those calls organized. So we worked with the wonderful GIS staff and developed a Canada Goose Depredation Hub to keep those organized. It's a mobile and website compatible platform. So landowners are now asked to, if they've got Canada goose issues on their fields, to go log in and enter their information electronically. Because depredation is a private, 100% private, happens on private property, we need to keep those things organized because we're now accessing private property, making sure that we're on the right property. So what landowners would do is either request a service, i.e. hazing techniques, temporary electric fence like you guys saw yesterday on our field tour, or another thing we offer is a kill permit for those landowners to take a few geese with that kill permit to help haze those geese out of that immediate area. So real quick, a couple pictures here on the left side for those of you that are not real familiar with depredation. That is a temporary electric fence like we saw yesterday. Seasonal or intern there constructing that fence. Not a lot of bean growth, so it's early in the year, just after planting. The center middle picture there is a propane cannon. It's an LP tank that is set to a timer that goes off about every 30 minutes to 45 minutes depending on the setting. And the right picture there is another tool in our toolbox. It's a 3D coyote decoy. Sometimes those propane cannons we run out depending on the need, and so we've added that to our arsenal as well in certain situations. Those are really good for golf course type settings. So here is a dashboard of what it looks like and what I can monitor from my desk or anybody else in the agency. This is a really good tool for law enforcement to be able to monitor. You know, if they got to go make some landowner contacts, they can look at this and see kind of where the bulk of the calls are coming in and go make some field contacts. This specific one is a request for service dashboard. So when a landowner goes in and requests electric temporary fence, they go in and a blue dot is placed on the map. And so our interns every morning can show up, look at the map on their phone, and they know exactly where they're going. We're not handling papers with ink on them or post-it notes that get handed from the secretaries. 10 years ago, we would have the intern workstation with 100 post-it notes on it. You know, so-and-so called, here's the coordinates of the field, here's their number. Those things, as you know, get stuck to the wrong items and they get misplaced and lost, and ultimately we're responsible for that. So that's one of the purposes of this electronic hub system, is to make that much more efficient and more user-friendly as well. So as the interns progress, as they get fields done, they go in manually on their cell phones and convert that over, letting us know, letting them know that the fields are done. They've built a fence, it's done, and we can monitor that progress through the summer to see if we need to pull in extra help. If we're falling behind because of the demand and the requests, I can reach out to another region or other full-time staff in our own region, or I can get out there in the field and help myself. So it really gives us a really live picture of what work is coming and how far we are behind. So just a couple real things, real quick things. This is statewide. As you can see, the Northeast Region 4 is the hub of depredation. We've got the potholes, we've got agriculture, and we'll forever have it. We are on the Prairie Coteau, Prairie Pothole Region. So statewide, we had 377 requests for service this year. Region 1 has got one out there. You can see that that is red. That's another indicator from our map. If we do fall behind more than 5 days, it does indicate to us that it's red and it needs special attention. So in the very one last thing I want to point out is we do track the amount of materials we put out. The bottom right number there is 495,000 feet of fence, which relates to 94 miles this year. So in Region 4 alone, I'll identify those numbers. This year in Region 4, we had 83 miles of fence. In 2022, we had 96 miles of fence. 2021, we had 120 miles of fence. And back in 2020, we had 148 miles of temporary electric fence placed just in the northeast corner. Real quick, that's how many miles of fence we put out. As you know, if you put it out, you got to take it down. So we had about 300 miles of fence that our interns put up and took down in the matter of 3 months. So the demand, the request is there. So really, really good tool for us. And this just is a zoomed in version of the map, and it kind of you can really pick this map apart, and it tells you a lot of things where the hot spots are. You can zoom in even further and look at clusters of dots and figure out, you know, if there's specific landowners we need to go work with and implement some private land projects or buffer strips or something a little bit more longer term. This mapping system really allows us to hone in on those areas and even click at one of those individual dots and look at who it is, get their contact information, and like I said, law enforcement staff, full-time staff can go make contacts and work directly with those individuals for a better solution. Another option we added into this overall general goose depredation hub is a kill permit dashboard. So as you know, I mentioned we do offer kill permits through the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to take Canada geese on their own property that are causing damage. This year, statewide, we issued 414 permits to individual landowners. The total take of those permits that has been submitted so far is 632 Canada geese. So as part of our reporting process, we do require that we are required to report those numbers to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. So our finalized permits thus far, where basically landowners have signed off, said my permit is done, I've turned it in, we've reported just under 180 permits of the 414 so far. We know it's harvest season. Our deadline has passed, but we start sending out reminder emails to landowners to let them know that those numbers need to be reported. And once it gets late enough in the year, we follow up with phone calls. And again, this whole electronic system is super easy to coordinate and make sure that we're not calling somebody in that has already reported. So just a very modern, efficient way for us to monitor and look at that information. There you can see on the maps, it's like a thunderstorm map. The Northeast there, Day County, Clark County, are the top two counties, it looks like, for number of permits and also number of Canada geese taken. So real quick, the depredation toolbox that we use, number one thing, it's a managed species, so we allow hunting. Hunting seasons are our best tool to get hunters out there. The hunters, through a surcharge on their license, do pay for this program for us to work with these landowners and buy the material and hire the interns to do what we do. So August management takes place in August, and we're, I think, 3 weeks into that season now. It's been fairly good. Our population is a little bit down this year. Our success was probably anecdotally not what it has been, but geese are constantly moving, showing up with a late spring. The nesting season might have been a little bit later too. So again, that's all anecdotal, but we also offer the early fall season. Another great opportunity to harvest geese early on as our number one tool with hunters out there. You can see in the bottom left picture there, I don't know if you guys can recognize, but the individual on the left may or may not be sitting at the head table. I don't think he shot any of those geese that day, but yeah, that was a great hunt. And wheat fields this time of the year is probably the best place to be. Through our early hunting seasons, we initiated an early fall Canada Goose Access Program. We're on year three of that. Basically, what we looked at trying to do is link more hunters with more of those producers that experience damage. It's not been easy. Private property sometimes can be difficult to get on, but it's a great opportunity for us to use the depredation hub and where those clusters are to go pursue those landowners that we provided services on and try to get them to sign some property up along field edges or wheat fields nearby to help target those resident Canada geese that were causing problems. So there you can see this year we had 2,300 acres signed up. Last year we had 3,900 acres, and in the first year, the pilot year, we had 6,900 acres. I do want to note another benefit of this program is in 2021, of those 6,900 acres, we had about 35 to 3,900 acres get converted or enrolled into either a walk-in or co-op access program. So it was a good foot in the door, and those producers realized, this was a really good option for us. All the bad things that we've been told about these problems didn't happen, so they looked at the benefit and said, this is a great option. So it actually turned it into a 10-year contract agreement through walk-in or co-op waterfowl access program. Hazing devices, you can see in the top left, those LP propane cannons are one of the tools. The coyote decoy is another tool. And this goes back a ways. We haven't used these much. Mixed reviews on these, but these are basically PVC pole sticking up in the air tied to a eagle kite. It looks like an eagle. When the wind is flopping those things at 40 mile an hour, they don't fly straight. It was a good tool. I mean, we are not going to look at new tools that hit the market. If there's something new out there, we'll try it. We'll invest a little bit of money to see if it attacks these geese from a different angle, and we're open to new ideas, and we try new things every year. So buffer strips, like I did mention, we do provide some buffer strips in some areas. I think there's going to be a photo coming up here of some of those examples, but temporary buffer strips that we pursue annually or even permanent that are going to be in the on the landscape for 10 plus years through a CRP program or something like that. We do offer those as well. Fencing, there's another photo of an electric temporary fence. We also provide permanent fencing as well, and there should be a photo coming up. But temporary fencing, as you saw yesterday, as the weeds grow and the crop grows, it does ground those fences out so they don't work 100% all through the growing season. But I would say we get more success out of those than we have failures, and that is as good as we can ask for given all the conditions and changes that we go through in the Northeast with wind events, weather events, all the wildlife. Another good option that is our go-to feeding sites. We do use that map where there's clusters of points, and we do implement some feeding sites on some areas, game production areas. Public land owned by the state Game and Fish is one of those areas where we go mow a site and we'll throw some shelled corn out there and try to attract those family groups to that area, saving us maybe miles and miles of fence along some of the bodies of water that are rather extensive. So we do implement those every year on a limited basis based on where we're getting a lot of phone calls and where we know that it's going to be successful. So it does save us some work. Nest work is another tool that we do use from time to time when and where applicable. It's not always successful in the northeast because of the amount of water. If we do nest work on certain bodies of water where there's islands, there's another big body of water just over those hill, and those geese do move. So we do implement that when and where we can. And then again, the kill permits, like I said, we use staff when and where needed, as needed basis, as well as using the landowners too. So with Canada goose depredation, there's good. Like we mentioned yesterday, South Dakota does have one of the most extensive and successful wildlife damage programs in the country. We work with hundreds of producers every year regarding Canada goose depredation and all species when it comes down to it. But Canada goose depredation, hundreds. You saw we 414 individuals this year that we worked with, and we really do make good relationships with them. And sometimes I know the photo in the top left is obviously not Canada goose depredation, but it's hard to find a photo and with our electronic system to get out there when we are working on those sites. But this is an individual, doesn't matter the species, was very upset, didn't know about all the programs. We went out there, provided some options. He was even willing to do some work on his end of things, and we solved this problem, and he was very well satisfied with what we did come and do. So he now knows more about our programs and will be calling in the future. And like in the bottom left, that is a Canada depredation site where a landowner actually took it upon himself to use his own means and his own tools. I remember this one. It was a number of years ago, but it was a Thursday or a Friday when we were backlogged. We were a few days behind. The individual had a spare car sitting around in the driveway, and he just went out there and parked it until we could get out there. You know, that probably bought that individual 3, 4, or 5 days or a week of geese furthering damaging that area. And it just goes to show we do have some producers, you know, thinking outside of the box, which is really good, which is what we're really trying to strive for. And we're still educating new landowners every year too. Every day we're getting phone calls, you know, farm shows, state fair is a really good option too. We get producers coming up and asking questions about this and that, and we take advantage of those opportunities and educate them on our programs, and a lot of time it generates phone calls the following year with them seeking some of the assistance. Lastly, the photo there, you can see the amount of potholes off in the distance, and down way at the bottom, about central picture, and then up just above the middle there, you three separate spots of varying degrees of depredation. I mean, it's right there. That's three fences that we're going to be building. So it's going to take some time, but up where we have water, we're dealing with Canada goose depredation on pretty much every one of these bodies of water. The bad. Nobody likes to see it, but producers do experience light, moderate, and extensive crop damage, varying degrees. But you know, tolerance levels are different too. If you don't farm that much, every acre counts. If you've got thousands of acres, you can be a little bit more tolerable. But we have to adapt to that as well. We've got abundant potholes, and like we mentioned yesterday, with the Goose Lake area, a lot of these bodies of water expanding and getting bigger. With every rain event, it seems like. Eastern South Dakota, you can see from the right there, is prime nesting habitat. These geese are able to nest in anything, and they stuck it out this year. We had a late winter, but they were still successful in nesting because we're still dealing with Canada goose depredation in the northeast this year. So that hen, I think that nest was successful. That was actually a photo at Outdoor Campus West in Rapid City, but it tells the story of Canada goose depredation. They're tough individuals, and they're becoming more and more adventurous and daring. You can see that bottom picture there. That's a little bit of a cut bank there. Years ago, we would never have had to fence that area. Those geese wouldn't scale that cut bank anymore. They want the taste of bean, and it doesn't matter what they got to go through. They're gonna scale that. They're gonna find a way. So it's made us adapt to them, and put more material out in the field, and take a few more of those calls, and really hone in on probably a temporary fence there, because these geese are not predictable anymore like they once were. So we're constantly learning as well. Lastly, the opportunity that Canada Goose Depredation provides. I mean, again, private landowners are who we work with day to day, because this is a private lands program, and we've now got additional private lands biologists spread across the state. So what it does is it allows our private lands biologists to work through CRP programs, through our buffer strip programs, through CREP programs, to try to find the right program for them and minimize the amount of damage that they experience through these programs. So you can see in the top there, top picture, it's a sweet clover buffer strip that's on Wabay Lake, a few years old, but that individual never had goose depredation after that buffer strip was planted, and he was, I think that's an alfalfa field there. It did the trick. So anybody that knows sweet clover, nothing's getting through that when it intertangles. So, and, you know, and on the positive end, there's going to be some waterfowl. There's going to be some hen pheasants nesting in that and raising successful broods too. So on the picture on the right there, that's a true buffer strip. That's a small grain wheat buffer strip planted along endless water there. And, you know, that it temporarily provides a food source for those geese, but it also buffers that bean crop, and it works tremendously. A little bit more effort. We don't have the amount of landowners putting wheat in the ground, small grains anymore, so that's one of our challenges. But nonetheless, we do get some individuals willing to go that extra mile and help find ways to protect that bean crop of theirs. So that was a really good example. You see those photos a lot, because that's cooperation right there. And then the bottom picture there is a woven wire fence. That's another permanent option that we were willing to apply in areas where the water level is not going to change. It's a 32-inch woven wire fence along certain borders of those bodies of water where it's going to 100% be effective. And then, like I said, the opportunity to maximize hunting opportunities. We've done that through early fall access programs, through walk-in area programs, co-op programs, especially in the Northeast, and that early fall access program. We'd like to see more cooperators and landowners get into that program, but we're on year three, and we just got to get our legs under us a little bit more and not let that momentum go. Internship opportunities. So we hire 9 interns in the Northeast, 5 stationed out of Webster, 4 out of Watertown. There on the left, you can see they're picking up goose fence at the end of the summer. This is about the time they're ready to kind of be done with it, get back to school, see some of their friends, skip class. But that's our method right now is with these new brushless drills. We're able to wind that fence up very effectively. In the bottom, you know, one thing I want to touch on though on internship opportunities is it's not only goose depredation season. It's a season for us to, these individuals are going after a degree in the wildlife management field. So they're a special bunch to us. So we make sure that they're certified and everything that they may need in the future jobs, whether it be in another state or coming back to us in any other position that they might need certification. So we get them ATV, UTV certified on some days where we're caught up or whatever. And there you can see one of our trainers getting them certified in that. And then also the banding opportunities. There's a couple individuals from this year banding some waterfowl, duck. Most of these people are duck and goose waterfowl hunters, whether here or in their home state, but that's always the perk of the summer. They get to actually handle and learn some biology about the ducks that they're handling. So with that, I just kind of added some photos of a lot of rather extensive goose depredation photos. I mean, this is not what we like to see. It's what we're dealt with in the Northeast with all the water, but nonetheless, we've got opportunities to work with these producers and really put a longer-term solution out on the landscape. So, and there's a goose right there basically nesting on the beach. So we have whatever nesting habitat they're looking for, it seems like. But with that, I'll take any questions.
Questions for Nick or comments? Commissioner White?
One question. I think that clover idea is just fantastic. Do we participate in the cost of putting that clover, or do we provide seed or anything like that?
Through the chair. Yeah. Yes, we absolutely do. Yep. Well, we work with them any way we can. We'll pay for the food plot. We'll provide the seed. It depends on the different type, but yes, we try to make that as big of a sell to them as we possibly can.
Very good idea. Thank you.
Nick, we were able to go and visit an area where there's some goose depredation and see some of the efforts that you and your team have been doing. One thing I didn't know, and I was impressed with, how unique what we do is compared to other states. And I don't know that a lot of the citizens realize how much of the cost is paid for by GFMP and how much work is done compared to other states and what they do or don't do. Could you just give a brief overview of how unique maybe it is what we do and provide compared
Sure.
to other areas?
Yes. So we get interns from all over the country, and a lot of them, this is maybe their second or third internship, and their initial internships are with their home state wildlife agency, whatever it is. And so we always ask them, you know, what does your state do? Nothing. I mean, it's 100% on the landowner. Now, they don't have probably the agriculture like we do and the amount of water, but nonetheless, I mean, our wildlife damage program is, in my opinion, number one. So, for example, I don't know specifics, but I've got family that does farm in Minnesota. If a producer in Minnesota were to call with goose depredation issues, they'd call the agency, a hotline or something like that, and they would work probably through a private lands biologist that has multiple counties, 5-6 counties, or their local CO, and they would deliver them an X number of material. I've heard in the past it's about $500 worth of material, which will probably cover a quarter mile of fence, if with today's prices, probably a quarter mile of fence is all that would cover, and that's pretty much the max that they're willing to do. On top of that, if they need more, they can go purchase more, but that's about the limit that I've ever heard of that other states will provide to producers. Yeah, we've got the water, we've got the islands, we've got peninsulas, just the perfect storm. And like I said, hunters here do pay for it through a surcharge on their license. So we are looking for ways to get more hunters out there and connected with these individuals that we do provide services for. I think that's pretty important.
Very good. Any other Commissioner Bartley?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, sir. Do you get calls, since we are so close to Minnesota, do you get calls from Minnesota residents to look for, I guess, any kind of resources or assistance?
Actually, yes. We do. Many of our permits, because we are adjacent to North Dakota and Minnesota, we get a lot of landowners and farmers that do farm both sides of the line. So we work with landowners and operators in South Dakota. So if they live just across the border, but they farm in South Dakota experiencing damage, we will issue them a permit. Yep. And we don't go over across state lines and fence, but we will farm fence right up to the fence lines, and we do it often. So we work with landowners that live in North Dakota or Minnesota, but do operate in our state. Yep. We think that's important.
Any other comments or questions? Commissioner Whitmire.
Yeah, thank you. Great report, and especially with all the work that's done. I mean, that's rough work. It's humid. There's wood ticks everywhere, and mosquitoes when you get in those areas. But yeah, so first off, thank you. Great job. On the expense end of it, certainly, I think you said 2020 was 120 to 140 miles or something like that. You were buying a lot of supplies that year. Are those fencers and whatnot supplies, are they, now that we're down to only 100 miles, it's still a lot, but since you're not having to ramp up, is it, are those costs coming down a little bit and it's more just man hours now versus all the supplies that had to be purchased?
Yeah, so as luck would have it, if I recall, 2010, 11, and 12 were probably our peak years. And of course, that's when I was a wildlife damage specialist in the field. So I was directly, you know, responding to a lot of these calls with interns that I was supervising. So during those years, because it was our peak, that's probably when we purchased the bulk of our materials. And there's been years since then that we don't go through 75% of the materials we have already purchased. So we haven't probably bought a lot of materials or spent a lot of money on materials in the last probably 4 or 5 years. Because we still have leftovers, the poly posts, I mean, we have thousands and thousands of posts. I mean, it takes up full storage bays of storage sheds. But yes, to answer your question, most of our expenses are, you know, fuel, interns, and updating some of that older stuff. Fencers don't last forever. We're constantly replacing batteries. Buying new models because the old models of the electric fencers, they don't make anymore, so we can't buy parts to fix them. Replacing cannons, those things sometimes get run over by equipment, sprayers, stuff like that. So yes, most of the bulk of our equipment has already been purchased. We're just now starting to replace those as needed.
Very good. Anything else? Yes.
Oh, just a note, being one of the 414 people that signed up for the control, when finalizing, there's kind of a second step. It's not really apparent. You kind of hit finish, and then you got to go back and do another. It seems like you almost got to go back in. It's, as a person that's, you know, learning the system, I'm assuming other operators, too, are probably in the same boat. It's just a little bit difficult to finalize, and when you said that, you know, how many people have yet to submit their final total, that could be a little connection with that one. But anyway, we'll get there.
Yeah, through the chair, if you don't mind. Yeah, so we our correspondence is now through email, and I'm just as guilty. My personal email addresses are inundated with junk mail. So we do get a lot of producers that haven't finalized yet, that just don't think to go in there. So we do send reminders, and we try to make it as easy as possible with the shortcut link in there, but that is something that we know about. We're trying to simplify that whole process, working with GIS staff. We're going to continue to make that more efficient and easier for the user. Thank you for that feedback, though. You bet.
Very good. Thank you for all you do. Great presentation. We're gonna